Well, well, welcome to Between Sundays. I'm Tyler, and I dare you to tell me coconut shrimp is detestable. Tim is pitching his tabernacle to tell us how cleanliness laws of Leviticus can bring us together. But before we chew the cud, now that the priests have pronounced them unclean, let's welcome in our favorite split-hooved co-host, Smarin and Barry.
Split-hooves.
Good day, guys. Unclean.
How you guys doing?
Great. How are you?
Good.
Nice Tim's intro.
Here.
Yeah. There's a lot of material
this was a great week for the pod. Sound bites.
Don't eat shrimp.
That's a great week. I got to like re-up all of them.
I can't wait to hear it. How many do we have?
Oh, a lot. We're good.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Some of my favorite foods, absolute favorite foods, are unclean.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like coconut shrimp, apparently.
Yeah, obviously they didn't have that when they wrote these, because...
Is that right?
Well, there's nothing wrong with coconut. Is there any kind of like fake shrimp you could eat that's plant-based?
No, I would never do that.
Ew, me neither. And I eat plant-based. Some things you don't try to replicate, and that's one of them.
What's new, guys? What's happening? This is for all three of you. What's going on?
Well... I could start. I got bit by a horse yesterday.
What? Barry, are you okay?
I'm fine. So the horses that are...
Rabbits and camels?
Whoa!
Nope, just horses. Our neighbor's boarding some horses that are in our barn, and I regularly go out and interact with them and pet them and talk to them and just see how they're doing. But I wear like my little puffy down jacket often when it's cold out there, and they just must think that that is some really delicious looking thing to nibble on. So usually they'll try to just grab the jacket and pull it. And so
you mentioned that before.
Yeah.
The pod.
So this time, little Miles, who's a baby horse, he just went ahead and just went straight to grab my entire bicep and like pinched my skin so bad that I immediately had a welt. It was really bad. So anyway, so I'm fine.
What were you trying to do?
I was just saying hi to him. I was petting him and he's like, and just like chomped right down. So that happened.
Wow.
But other than that, things are good. I'm a plumber now, so I'm learning how to plumb.
What are you doing?
Because you've already mastered woodworking and you're on to the next.
No, this is just me trying to, reaping what I sowed when it came to trying to have us DIY our own bathroom. So I'm redoing all the plumbing for the vanity and the sink, and it's much, much more work than I thought it was going to be.
Really?
So, like opening up walls? Are you having to?
Yeah. I had to take away a big chunk of the wall, which I was expecting, but then one of the old PVC pipes broke, so I had to redo all the PVC, and then the stub out galvanized steel, and it's got a big chip in it, and it's kind of corroded, so I've had to like...
Can't have that.
No, I had to use my Dremel tool and a thing to file it all down, and I was using big metal files to get it down so that the chip wasn't there, so I could still get some threads to... Anyway.
You know Barry's really into something
chip
when...
Chip and threads.
You're just like in the hallway, and he says... Hey, look at this. I think it's a really good-looking P-trap. What?
We have our vanity is totally exposed because it's this, you know, the black walnut, which by the way, oh man, it looks good. It looks so good. I've got the polyurethane on the top, everything now. It's so good.
This is the bathroom.
This is the bathroom counter. Yeah. Right. Yeah, live edge. It's so cool. But anyway, it's resting on like a very Spartan open style thing with legs, and so
for the last like 2 minutes you've been saying just words I don't know what they are.
The P-trap is completely exposed.
Yeah. That's the way you want it.
Yeah. So anyway, all that to say, I've like gotten all the parts, and then oh wait, it's 6 inches too short. All right. So I go buy a new part, I put it in the thing, oh wait, this isn't gonna work. And I even was trying to use those little knobs that you turn to turn on the hot or cold water under the sink. I was using the fittings that were already there from before. That's another mistake. Don't use old fittings because who knows that the, you know, the grommets
like
and the washers are old. And so
new wine and old wine skins.
It was exactly
no,
that.
Like
so I got everything to the point where it was like perfectly on there. It was nothing was going to leak. And then I opened it up and water starts shooting out the front of it. So going back to Lowe's.
Oh, so it's not done.
Nope. Still working on it. But anyway, that's all. It's been fun. I've enjoyed
it. So you said
it.
It's open underneath your vanity?
Yes.
Like where are you going to store your Q-tips?
There's a hole. There was this ugly shelf.
Something to think about. Something to think about.
Up to the side that had like a really awkward sort of closet. You could like open it, but it would open wide.
Okay, but anyway, it was built in?
It was built. It's built into the wall, mm-hmm. and so we just took the door off of it, and Liv refinished all of the shelves there and painted the inside, and it looks really cool.
I'm sure
you guys,
all friends of the pod are just like picturing this. No, they're just picturing this in their minds.
Just think, up and coming, Chip and Joanna Gaines.
Yeah.
Got nothing.
Wow.
On this ragtag duo.
Yeah.
Anyway,
major.
We're having a good time. We're enjoying it.
When you're done, are you going to buy a van and paint on the side? Fix it, man, and go around and do stuff.
I might. That's
side hustle.
I have a sump in my basement. It's a grinder with a grinder pump for the bathroom and the. But it's just been all the parts are there, and I just haven't brought myself to go buy the 4 feet of pipe that I need to get.
Yeah.
Do you want to? Like,
yeah, he's in. He's on it.
I'll just look it up on YouTube and figure it out. That's how I've done everything else. So
I can tell you how to do it. I could just say,
you just don't want to get the pipe.
I don't want to go buy that pipe. There's something about going to Lowe's right now in my life that I just am not about it.
Can't do it, man.
Well, my wife loves it because she always says get a cart. That's always dangerous.
Yeah.
When you go in, I'm thinking I'm getting four screws, and she says get a cart.
The worst thing about Lowe's. Is that not there isn't a single Lowe's that's like another Lowe's.
Right.
They're all laid out differently.
Yeah, they are.
That is so annoying.
It's like going to a different grocery store, like a Kroger. You're like, it's all is chaos and loss. There is no sense of meaning when you're walking into another store.
But maybe that's because they want you to go and find a sales associate because
they
want to treat you like family.
Have you guys noticed at Lowe's? I mean, I've been there a lot recently, and there are two kinds of sales associates. They're the ones when you ask a question, and they're like, oh yeah, it's going to be aisle three. Look on your left, up above. You know, they're like, and there's other people who are like, yeah, I can help you with that. You're like, oh no, you don't know anything about what I'm asking right now. Anyway, so we're doing good. That's all. How are y'all?
Yeah, Maren, how you doing?
I am tired, but I'm good. I had my grandma for 5 days and drove her back home to Chicago yesterday.
How was that experience?
It was an experience.
What'd you guys do?
Let me tell you. Grandma likes to take long walks.
Wow.
In the cold. Yeah.
Okay.
She loves, oh my goodness. We watched an overabundance of shows like Dance Moms. And
what?
So she likes Dancing with the Stars. I'm always trying to find
something. She's like into like reality TV.
To occupy her time.
Your grandma?
My grandmother. And I don't have Dancing with the Stars. Couldn't find it. I'm like, well, this looks like a dance show. It's called Dance Moms.
Oh, yeah.
I'm pretty sure there's dancing children. You want to watch that, grandma? So we got real into Dance Moms for a minute there. But then the drama got a little too tense and she didn't really like the way that woman was behaving. So then we switched to some more family-friendly viewing. We watched Full House from the first season, like binging Full House for hours and hours
on it. That's amazing. I used to watch that show all the time. Now, how old is she? She's in her
80s.
80s.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And she likes taking walks.
She likes taking
long
walks.
Like the new version of Full House?
No.
The old
version. Yeah, like Jesse with the mullet.
Everywhere you look.
Yes. That's what we watched. No, it's good. She's such a sweet-hearted person, and she has dementia, so of course there's challenges there. But by and large, she's just grateful for everything that I do for her, for everything I cook for her.
Well, that's
nice.
That's nice.
Probably the worst thing that happened was when I gave her coffee one day, and the first day she was there, I gave her coffee, sugar, and creamer, and everything went fine. The second morning, she was a little more disoriented, and she poured the creamer into the sugar bowl and was stirring all of my sugar in with half of my creamer that she dumped into this bowl.
Okay, I know where that comes from. You know, that's an old Benny Hill joke.
Is it really?
Oh, yeah. He would boil...
Was she just making a joke?
He would make a pot of tea.
Who's Benny Hill?
Benny Hill.
Who is that?
Do you have grandparents, Tyler?
They know who he is?
Yes.
Yeah, he would have a little cup and a big thing of tea. How did he do that? He would put he'd put one scoop of sugar in the cup, and then he would pour all the tea in the sugar bowl.
That's exactly what she did.
He always did that.
She was trying to make you laugh.
Except, was she doing a bit?
Maybe grandma was doing a bit. I had my back turned to her, and then I just hear her sweet little voice say, I think I made a mistake.
Oh.
And then I go over there and, okay, grandma, well, there's all my sugar.
Is he a comedian, Benny Hill?
Yes.
Okay. He's an English.
I thought he was like a pastor.
No, that's Benny Hinn.
Yeah.
You know, though,
I was like, why is that an old joke?
Both of their pictures are next to each other under comedians.
Yeah.
Oh.
Burn.
Now, my other grandma would not like that. She would not like what you just said there.
Well,
oh really?
Because she never thought Benny Hill was funny.
Zing.
Wow.
Yeah, so it was good. I took her back yesterday and got to visit with my dad for a couple of minutes. And then I had actually brought one of my volunteer musicians from Fishers. My friend Darwin went with me.
Oh, cool.
On a Chicago adventure. Yeah. So I took her to all the tastiest
stomping
spots.
Grounds.
Mm. Yep, from the south side to the north side and everywhere in between. We had a lot
great.
Of fun.
Great.
Have I ever asked you what your favorite Chicago pizza is?
I'm not sure if we have discussed this, and it's a bit controversial. So yeah. I would lean more toward the Giordano's, not mm-hmm. the Pizzeria Uno or the what
Luminati's.
Is it? Luminati's. No,
really?
I'm really not big on the Luminati's. But more than Giordano's, when we lived on the south side of Chicago, right by Midway Airport, there was this mom and pop operation that had the greatest deep dish.
Yeah.
The problem I have with Giordano's, and I will probably talk about this for way too long, but their sauce is a bit more tomato pasty,
mm-hmm.
and I don't want all that tomato paste.
Yeah.
I want it to be a little bit looser, a little bit fresher, and that's what this mom and pop thing had going on.
See, that's what I feel like Luminati's has. Their sauce has so much more flavor
I
to me.
I think it's or maybe their crust that's not
that, you don't
that
like
great.
It. It's kind of buttery and
yeah.
too buttery.
Insects don't have blood in them.
Were you just feasting on this sermon this week?
It is.
An overabundance of sound bites.
It's a gold mine.
I could see him. He was sitting in the audience. Every time I'd say anything, yeah. he'd lean back and chuckle.
I was sitting at my desk, just pulling these, just yeah. laughing to myself.
Yeah. I wish we could show visually some of the things, like the new hand motion.
The hooves.
Yeah. That's good. Yeah.
You got to do the Vulcan yeah. sign, like yeah. live long and prosper, turn it forward, and you've got hooves.
Honestly, I don't rehearse that.
Tim, what's new with you? What's going on?
My wife and I were in Florida for a couple of weeks. That was...
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it was good. It was good.
Just vacay or...
Yeah, I did a lot of work while I was there.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, and I took my bike down. And
oh, cool.
Yeah, and I rode my bike down there. But I got stopped twice. I drove down. She had been there a few days with Meg Blevins, and mm-hmm. they were painting, which is good for them to do. And then I came down and... But I got caught twice on the way down on the first day and sat for 4 hours in the middle of nowhere. And only, I got to like, not even to Chattanooga, I don't think. I got,
you know. Oh, you're stuck in traffic.
Yeah, in traffic because of accidents.
Oh, wow.
And so it took me way longer to get there than I thought it would. And then when we came back, we got in that was a big storm a couple of weeks ago down south, and it literally shut Knoxville down. When we got to Knoxville, the rain was so bad that they had closed the schools. They'd closed the interstate, everything. Mm. We got off it. It was like noon. We'd been driving from Atlanta. I think it was like 11 in the morning or something like that. We'd driven 2 hours. That's right. In pouring rain. I'd never seen anything like it. And we got off the highway and there was a Holiday Inn Express and we had to spend the night because the road was just shut down.
Oh, wow.
The rain was so bad. I'd never seen anything like it. So it took us way longer to get home than we thought it would. But
man.
But it was good in Florida, and I did get a lot of miles. You know, Sanibel and Captiva, at its highest points are like 3 feet above sea
yeah.
level.
Yeah.
So all over the island, they have those big things that tell you how fast you're going. You know, the electric things. That tell mm-hmm. you
yeah.
They're telling you to slow down.
Yeah.
And no way. I was just making
cruising.
I was making those things work. That's all I got to say, yeah.
So when you're down there, are you riding by yourself, or are there people riding with you?
No, there... I only saw one person on a bicycle that actually looked like a cyclist.
Mm-hmm.
There are thousands of people riding bikes down
yeah,
there.
But they're like the big wheel
beach cruisers.
Looking,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was riding by myself.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. We are in week five.
Four.
Four of our sermon series, Return to Eden. Tim, you're here because you gave a great sermon about the cleanliness rules or cleanliness laws. And so I want to talk about that. So for anybody who may have missed it or hasn't seen the sermon yet, what would you say was the big takeaway or big idea you wanted people to hear? What was that?
That was Marin's me, I'm sorry.
Fell. I thought it was a drum that was
I thought I asked Tim like the question, he just slammed the table. Like
no, I thought you were beating a drum to introduce me there. The biggest idea was that the cleanliness laws at their core are all about God's desire to be with us, that mm-hmm. there's a connection between all of the issues we've been talking about, Eden representing the best possible relationship we can have with God and with one another. And the cleanliness laws made it possible for the Jews to live in the same vicinity physically with God. And that's what he wanted. And so it's emblematic of what the whole text is about, mm-hmm. the whole Bible's about. So I wanted to press that because you could get carried away with just all the intricacies of the laws and the weirdness of them and trying to explain them. And, or there's also the idea of people, a number of people asked me about this, about the, whether those laws were health laws that they didn't know they were being given to them for health purposes. And if that's the case, then all that means is that God's keeping a lot of secrets from us.
Yeah.
And
you mean people have said, oh, actually the law, it was actually a way for God to help the Israelites be hygienic.
Yes.
And that's why they shouldn't eat pigs, because pigs were really bad
right.
for health or something like mm-hmm. that.
Right. And I understand that idea, but that would have been unknown to anybody until like the late 1800s when
right.
we found out there were things called germs. And so the whole thing of that is interesting to us, but I can't believe that it the text, but which that text is like close to 2000 years old. And mm-hmm. it's like, had to know that we don't know what that's really about until then.
Yeah.
But that's why I focused on what was devotional for us today out of the laws.
So if the purpose of these cleanliness laws were to remind the Jews, or designed to help people understand that it was possible to return to what God had intended for us, did the Jews understand that, yet they still chose eventually as time went on, they became more interested in how to avoid becoming unclean? Like, was there a point where they were like,
that.
We totally understand that this is God trying to be closer to us, or was it always viewed as
no,
ways
they
to
would
be
have
unclean?
Any time, any of the period of time when God was physically present in some manner in the tabernacle, it would have been that way for them. They would have known the difference between God himself as the great holy one and us as not holy and not clean. It would have been a picture to them of the difference, and that when something that everybody would consider to be something that was somewhat polluting or somewhat different about us from the way we normally would be if we were healthy or in the midst of normality, they would recognize that was something that separated them from the tabernacle and from the presence of God who's right there. When we get to Jesus's time, God's presence hasn't been in the temple ever. It's not been in, they're thinking, if we can follow these laws properly and get ourselves cleaned up, he'll come back. He'll come back. Not that we can go be with him. So they don't have the same impetus for a long, long time. I've actually forgotten when the presence of God disappeared.
I have not found any references to the presence of God coming back in the second temple, at least not the...
Oh, no. Right. There's one reference of it coming in the... Is it Solomon's temple?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think I should look that up. But otherwise, you know, they're always hoping for the return. And so they see proactive following of the law, proactively following the rules as setting up for something else, for God to bring his presence back. And that presence coming would have a lot to do with other stuff too,
mm-hmm.
that they were trying to accomplish. But it, in the initial telling of the story, the idea is you do these things so that you are fully prepared in every manner and you've gone through the right processes and everything to be in my presence, because that's where I want you to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't, you know, we get weird about some of them, but for the most part, they're not that. I mean, there are, some of them are long and drawn out, and I'm sure the meanings are all there to them. But still, even those processes, if you thought you could go meet Jesus and he said, I want to make sure that you know, you've been cleaned up, please.
Yeah.
It probably wouldn't offend you that you needed to take a shower.
Yeah.
Now, I don't think he would say that now. But there's something about his physical presence in a world where everybody's trying to have the gods be physically present. You remember, almost everything related to temples, everything related to all that they're doing are spaces for the gods to come and live with people. And they fed the gods. They went up and put food in these pillars and all kinds of stuff like that. And this was what everybody wanted. And here's God doing exactly what everybody wants. And he's got a few rules about it. that when you have something go wrong that couldn't happen to anybody, then just when it's over, take care of it in a particular way, and then you can come back and be with me. So I don't think it would have been as... To them, it probably made perfect sense to them. It doesn't make any sense to us.
Yeah.
We can't even talk about it without knowing about Jesus and about the open hands of God to everybody. And we can't think about it in any other way than with our own context. But to them, they didn't have any other context but the context they were living in.
Right. I think that's a really important thing, especially with these specific types of laws, is to realize that in their cultural context, they had a worldview that understood there were clean objects and unclean objects. There were orderly things and disorderly things. There's a way that the world is oriented.
Absolutely.
And all of these laws, are God essentially saying, okay, that's how you see the world. Well, I'm a part of the orderly stuff. I'm part of the life-giving stuff. So if you want to be with me, I want you to be with me. So join the life-giving stuff, be with the orderly stuff. Like it's working with their worldview to create a path back to him.
Right.
I am so proud of myself.
Yeah, you understood that?
That was like I was going to save it to the end, but yeah. That was like my big takeaway, is that he was working within the context versus like changing the context.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
That's the book I want to write, that all the places where God just chooses to let us believe things that are absolutely not true about the world, and he works through them to get to a bigger truth.
Yeah. Yeah, he wasn't like... I know all this stuff's ridiculous, so I'm just going to take all that ridiculousness away. He was like, these may be ridiculous, but...
Yeah, he wasn't like, rabbits don't chew the cud, guys. You're wrong. That's not how it works.
I think we talked about this, that we only know what 40% of the animals listed actually are.
Right. Oh, wow. We're taking a guess.
60% are guesses, and they're different in different translations. Yeah. And in different languages, they're really different. Hmm. And I looked at all that, and I thought, I'm going to talk about that. And I thought... No, because the one time I told people to scratch a word out, then people left the church because you're not supposed to change a single word in the Bible and all that.
Get out!
Yeah, and it's like, I can't win with that one, so don't tell everybody that we only know what 40% of those animals are. It's like, yeah, sorry.
Wow, they're not ready for that one, I guess. Yeah.
So you said there's two parts of these cleanliness laws, right? There's animals you can't eat.
And can eat.
And can eat. And then there's category stuff that might happen to you.
Well, that's what I called. Yeah. If some of it, just simply like the menstrual cycles of women happen regularly. Mm-hmm. But then boils, that's not that you don't get a boil by virtue of something that you do. I don't think. I don't know. I don't know. I've never had a boil, so I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know either.
Who knows?
I think they're actually, as a pastor who's been through a lot, I do know someone that you might all know who's had a boil and that I visited in the hospital. And
who?
I'm not going to say it right now. It's just us.
And this is funny because
it's
why?
Just us.
Just because.
Are we laughing?
I'm laughing because we're uncomfortable.
Okay.
We're laughing because it's just one more thing that Tim has experienced as a pastor.
Oh, right. No, I'm laughing because this is the time Tim is choosing to tell us that he knows somebody that we know that has had a boil.
This is the most interesting conversation I have ever had.
Okay, so I guess my main question, or one of my main questions with these laws, specifically with the animal ones, is like, was it just a bunch of guys who were like, we don't like shrimp, so anything with scales, good, shrimp, no good?
No, because they're thinking in terms, remember, this is all about order versus chaos. Everything really comes back to order versus chaos. And God is talking about himself being a God who brings order. And when the vast majority of something, let's take the fish. The vast majority of the creatures that they would have had access to, because remember, that nobody went way out in the ocean. Nobody went deep sea diving. They'd never been down in a submarine. They didn't know everything about the ocean.
You go out there, you die.
Yeah.
I completely understand.
They always stayed within visual connection to a shore, no matter how the people that crossed the ocean and stuff were the crazy people of the ancient world.
I agree.
And so their notion of what is in water is the vast majority of what they would find in water were creatures with fins and scales.
Mm-hmm.
And they knew that they swam. And that's what's supposed to live in water. But then you get this occasional weird thing like a lobster. And they're not thinking how it eats, but they know it doesn't swim and it doesn't have fins and it doesn't have scales. And it is chaotic in the yeah. sense that it's created, and they didn't think in terms of creation like we do either, but its choice of living is chaos within the structure of all the other things, the majority of things that live in the water. And so that's where this comes from. We know they were thinking that way. If you remember the Noah story, what does God tell Noah to do? He says, get a pair of every creature and seven of all the clean animals. Now, that their cleanliness with animals was clearly a thought in their mind. This is not new to them because the story is way older. And so they're already thinking about animals in terms of, and I remember what I said, that the word clean is an unfortunate translation. The real word for it is, it really means something that is prepared for the purposes that God has for it, really prepared for sacred purposes, was set apart for special purposes.
And that's my question then to that word specifically. When we see the word clean, can we use holiness and cleanliness interchangeably? Should we be thinking holy when we see the word clean?
Well, I've heard it that there's two dichotomies at work. There's holy and unholy, and then there's clean and unclean. And there's a progression that goes from an unclean object to a clean object to that can then become a holy object. Or a holy object that can go the other way.
Right. You can use, there's also holy, wait, there's profane and...
Holy and profane. Yeah.
And profane we've made into a word like somebody who's
evil
in speaking, but it simply is an ordinary unready for
unholy. Well, not holy.
Yeah, it's not ready to be used in a sacred way. There's something about it that needs to move to the sacred space.
So you define clean as ready to be with God or ready to be used by God.
Right.
Is that the same as being set apart?
Sacred. I think the initial plan was that everybody could be clean and holy and set apart. I think that the words actually have some different meaning in the way we think about the actual process of people doing the work of God. Like the priests were set apart.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They had to be holy to do that, or clean,
right.
And they had to be holy to do it. And but they were sacred in that they were specifically set apart. But God's initial plan was to have a nation of priests.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole idea about...
A nation of priests, a holy nation. That's
And so it all kind of works together. I wish that we could understand their dichotomy between all of these concepts.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's just very difficult for us.
I think I would say it's ready to be set apart. Mm-hmm. Clean means ready to be set apart, and then set apart would be like holy.
Mm-hmm.
So like I was thinking about this when you mentioned that. This is just kind of the way that they understood their world. We think about, let's say, why does red mean stop and green mean go? Like, why is that the case for us? And like globally,
right.
I mean, you could come up with reasons, but
red means hot and blue means cold.
Right. Was there a committee that decided that? Was it from observations of the natural world? Green is life and red is blood and death. I don't know. Who knows? But those are that's just part of our understanding of the world. Of course, red means stop and green means go.
Yeah.
So that's one of those things where no one tells us that. It's just, I guess we do teach it to our children, but through annoying songs and things.
Red light, green light.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, I think I look at it the same way. It's like, that's the technical word for a cultural meme, not meme the way we use it, but like an understanding that's shared among people.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think that's the way that a lot of these types of dichotomies were, but I don't know.
No, you do. You're right. Yeah. You're right about that because it's impossible for us to get fully into the mindset of people who use, and remember, we're translate. I know this is going to sound weird, but we don't even have any proof that Hebrew existed as a written language until 6 centuries after Moses.
Yeah.
And so we aren't even certain that the original documents that they were written in,
yeah,
if we're Hebrew.
Right.
And so we've got this long space of translation, and our clean and unclean primarily, I think, is an English idea. It's English ideas of how to speak about. It'd be interesting to look into medieval uses of those words to see how they might have influenced the translators of the King James, because that's where it comes from. And they used their 17th century, but they used 13th century grammar and vocabulary,
right,
for the purpose of making it sound more religious or more sacred.
Mm.
And so we'd have to go back to the 13th century dictionary from then and see what common people were using for that language. I mean, we might be surprised what we find. Mm. That's always interesting to me.
Yeah.
Well, Barry, I think based on what you were saying about certain things being understood culturally, like we understand red and green,
yeah,
I think that makes what Jesus came and did all the more radical,
mm-hmm,
and what that would have meant if they had this cultural understanding of, no, that leper is unclean. What are you doing? No, you don't touch a leper. You
right.
don't heal
oh
a leper.
Oh my gosh, it's way over the top what he did.
Yeah.
Today I was talking to a pastor from another church who's dealing with some issue, and I asked him, we're talking about language, that the subject matter is unimportant, but I said to him, what if I told you that this Friday is Blue Friday here in Indianapolis? What's that mean to you? He's from Ann Arbor.
Mm-hmm.
And he said something like, I'm not sure, is it like, has it got something to do with like Mardi Gras and the music or something like that? I go, no, it's the day in Indianapolis that everybody wears a Colts shirt. And there's no possibility that he would have ever known if I'd have used the term.
I definitely had no idea what that meant.
But you know what I'm saying. Yeah.
You both knew?
No, I didn't know. I don't.
Clearly have not been here long enough.
Well, when Indiana sports fans are weird anyways, but like when the Colts were good, Blue Friday meant that. When the Colts are bad, everybody just like doesn't talk about it.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, Maren, what you're saying, I think, that to me, and Tim talked about it, you mentioned this in your sermon, but that the idea that Jesus would so radically go against all of these, but what's so cool is that he reverses that flow of uncleanliness. You know, something right. can be
yes.
made unclean. He would touch something and it would become clean.
Yeah.
It would become set apart. And
yeah.
it was like he suddenly spread the cleanliness
yeah.
rather than the cleanliness affecting him, which I think is just, that's when everything gets turned upside down and it's so
right.
beautiful. And then he gives us the Holy Spirit and says, go, you know,
right.
go into all the world. And all of a sudden we're the ones that are spreading the
cleanliness.
And making things holy and we are becoming holy. And it's like, well, it's cool.
And something stood out to me is that you said, Jesus made sure people saw him do this.
Absolutely. And there are particular cases. The one with the woman with the bleeding.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
She would have been healed had she touched him and nothing would have been done. And she did not want to be seen because
right.
her presence, if she'd have been caught in the crowd previous to being healed, everybody would have been really upset about it
yeah.
because she would have
right.
made anybody unclean that she would have touched. But so he says, he keeps going, who touched me? Who touched me? Who touched me? And why? It's because there's no possibility that she wasn't known in that community.
Right.
And he wants to publicly let everybody know that she's not only been healed, but now she's clean. And that whatever sin they were connecting with it was clearly forgiven, because healing for something like that was a sign of forgiveness from God and all this stuff. And he publicly wants to make sure that this happens to, and it's that she's seen. And
yeah.
but then he goes right straight to a little dead girl who's exactly the same age as the years that she had been bleeding, and she's dead, and tells everybody she's asleep. Well, why does he tell everybody she's asleep? It's because they all go, ah, he's crazy, she's dead, you know, and we know when people are dead. And he goes up into the room with just a few people and he raises her from the dead and he tells them not to tell anybody. Everybody else now thinks that we made a mistake about whether she was dead or not. The reason is because she's the perfect marrying age, and her father had probably already hooked her up with somebody who doesn't want to be married to the girl who was dead.
Mm.
Because that's a terrible
the superstition or the, yeah.
yeah. And so he keeps that from being public all within a couple of minutes. Really, just a few minutes, all this happens. He's aware of the need of the woman with the bleeding thing, and he's aware of this little girl's need so she can have a full life. Everybody's going to go to their grave except those people who later, one of them writes it down and tells us about it. everybody's going to think that we just missed that one. She was just really asleep. And Jesus woke her up because that's what she needed, privacy. The other lady needed public. And that's constant in the stories. Every time you run into a miracle, you need to stop and think, what is this saying in the bigger picture of their world?
Because
we always change it.
Right. And just like the Old Testament laws, it's all about bringing people back into the presence of God. That's beautiful. Yeah. I love that.
Yeah. So you started your sermon by basically saying, like, I know people that go through the Bible, say they're going to go through the Bible, but they hit the brakes once they get to this part of the Bible. But like you just said, Barry, like once you kind of like take a step back or you see the bigger picture of stuff like this and you connect it, the arc to Jesus, it makes it less than lame, right? Like, or no, it makes it more than
that's pretty okay.
But yeah, because
that is not the worst thing.
Because it's cool because it's like, yeah, I don't want to read that. It's just a list of stuff that doesn't make any sense. And then all of a sudden you say, yeah, but Jesus is now the tent. Yeah. Jesus is now one that's saying you are unclean. You don't have to do the whole rigmarole, hyssop branches, whatever. And this would have meant something very important to the people initially reading it. And it can mean just as much to us, but you don't get it unless you look at the bigger story that the Bible's trying to tell.
Right. Here's something that most people miss. I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
No, I'm just thinking I've done that. I've hit the brakes. I've done that so many times.
I probably did it this year.
Especially as a teenager. I think I made that, hey, I'm going to do this, read the Bible in a year. I think I did that maybe every year.
Believe God!
My turn probably always stopped at about Judges. But one thing I never thought to do in those days was to ask when I hit those brick walls of what on earth does this mean? Like what you just told us about healing, was it Jairus's daughter, the dead girl and the woman with the issue of blood? That's just mind-boggling to think that there is an additional layer to that story that probably would have gone unnoticed by myself, that he was liberating them, not just from their affliction of death or illness, but from social stigma.
Right.
Yeah. Wouldn't have thought of that.
Bringing both of them back into the community.
So as we're telling people to take a big step back and look at the big picture, sometimes I feel like there are things we can't see unless we maybe run that by somebody. And we talked about this a lot on this podcast, but I think we mentioned it last week, this notion of like chewing on scriptures together collectively as a community and making that a part of the regular dialogue and an ongoing conversation. Yeah. I think that's where I failed miserably in all of my attempts to read the Bible through and muscle through it.
Do
I
it
tried
by yourself.
To do it on my own.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, yeah. And understanding what this would have meant to the Israelites is important because this connected me to them in ways that I wasn't necessarily expecting. Or like when you said these laws were designed to be liberating to the Jews, but inevitably they saw it as like they started focusing on becoming or avoiding becoming unclean. Like I do that all the time. Like that's human nature. Like when I was 15 years old, I wasn't like asking how far is too far with my girlfriend because I wanted to be liberated and closer to God or in his tent. I was asking it because I wanted to avoid sinning, you know, like, and so it connected me to the Israelites, like to hear that this is what this is designed for, but eventually you try to like ruin it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And you made this distinction, Tim, but this is something that is important when you look at the sequence of the story, that there is the tabernacle. God comes to dwell. He's leading the people. He's with them. And then he gives them the laws for how to be in relationship with him. He doesn't say, here's a bunch of laws. You follow this, I'll show up.
Show up. See, that's exactly
The
rest of the world, the rest of the ancient world operated under that latter rubric. They would say, they had all, and everything was incantational. They would have these massively long incantations that they felt they had to say every word exactly right and get everything perfect. They had to do all these things perfectly. And then that would obligate the God to do something.
To summon the God.
And this is a God who comes to be with them and says, now here are some things that are going to happen to you that I want you to take care of them in this way. And sometimes you're going to be separated from people for a while. And some of them are going to, the world is just working in a way right now that it, sometimes it's going to be awful for some of you. Mm. But for the most part, everybody gets back in. And I know that we would always say, well, it's so unfair to the person who can't ever get back in. But
right.
But we think of that word of the main one is leprosy. And that word encompassed every kind of skin possible thing. It's everything. Very few people had the skin diseases that we call leprosy now, that Hansen's disease. We're not even certain that anybody at that time actually had that particular condition. So, and yeah, they had to yell unclean and they had to do stuff and it sounds terrible, but can you imagine though, when it clears up or when the things clear up, how liberating that is? Or to know that the possibility, or somebody says, oh yeah, I had that. It took like a month to get over it. But you know, do that and then go through the process and you get to go back to the tabernacle and you don't have to worry about it anymore. How liberating that is, as opposed to living the rest of your life thinking, well, that happened to me and now I'm messed up for the rest of my days.
Yeah.
But it didn't always clear up, did it?
No, but we don't get many records about, you know, there are people. You remember the Naaman story? They said he's like the great Syrian leader and he's all this, but he had leprosy. Well, he was out and about and with everybody and living a regular life. So we don't even really know what that meant. We don't even really know what that meant. Yeah, the truth is some people don't clear up. But the condition of the world was broken enough that people did have problems that God wanted to make sure that they never were in a place where they had to think, I did something wrong, so this happened to me and I can never go back into the presence of God.
Were there provisions in the law for outcasts? Like, would they have been among the ones that were like gleaning from the corners of the field as they were told to kind of leave some of their harvest for like, the poor and needy.
I remember that the poor and the foreigners were allowed to. I don't know. I'll have to look. My feeling is that that family circumstances and stuff were so different than ours. I would be willing to. I know that people had to live in different spaces, and women would separate. But women separating themselves once 1 week a month was like the joy of their days. You know, they got to be just.
I mean, I hear that.
They'd go off. There's all kinds of stuff about the red tent thing.
The joy of my days.
But they'd get to separate themselves from everybody and just go be with the ladies, and they'd have time for as long as they needed to be away from everybody, and nobody mess with them. And
well, that's way different than having leprosy and being an
absolutely.
Outcast from society.
I also think one thing that's hard for us to grasp. Hard for me to grasp, I'll say, is what does it mean to be a part of a collectivist versus an individualist culture?
Absolutely.
We tend to look at everything from the context of individuals. And so when we think of a person with leprosy who isn't able to worship at the temple or at the tabernacle, it seems to us like a great injustice. And from an individualistic perspective, it is. But also there's a broader collectivist idea that God has opened a way for the people to come back into his presence. And there's a priest who represents the people who can enter the presence of God for the people, including the leper, including the leather tanner, who every time he touches a dead body, which is his entire profession, becomes unclean. And therefore, so there's a sense in which God is still engaging with the people, even though there's an individual level I'm not able to enter into the presence. I know that we are entering into the presence.
Yeah.
Well, I do know that by the time you get to the synagogue system, when it's fully fleshed out, that they were allowing lepers in the synagogues, but they had to sit in specific rows behind a curtain. But they were still allowed to be present. They were unclean, but they didn't force them completely away. People who had skin diseases, it's really hard. You know, when I think of leper, my immediate thought is the pictures that I was shown when I was a little kid in Sunday school and all that, or the pictures that we see from people in India now and Africa. And we don't know that that's the case.
So is the overall takeaway that, like, God has not changed from then in designing these laws or these rules so that people can be liberated and drawn closer to him, and he's not changed today. There's still stuff, and through Jesus, it is designed, his plan is designed to liberate us, draw us closer, let us know that he is that. Is that the overall application or takeaway?
Yeah.
That we hope people walked away with?
That's what I hoped people would walk away with. I mean, I know that in the sermon, I made an abrupt turn.
Yeah.
I made an abrupt turn, but that was purposeful because it, and I also kept referring to Jesus as Rabbi Jesus, if you noticed. I kept saying that because it was rabbis who were the ones who were the most likely to segregate themselves from people, women in particular. And we just had to, it's impossible for us to imagine the difference that Jesus has made in what it is to be close to God.
Right.
Yeah.
And, well, just look at the New Testament and just look at all the different times that it talks about sanctification. That's literally a fancy word for saying being made holy.
Made holy, yeah.
Being made set apart so that you can enter the presence of God. Look at all the places that talk about purity, being made pure, being made clean, sins washed white, you know, I'm washed as white as snow. It's all over the place.
It's everywhere.
And you realize that in answer to your question, God has not changed. He made a way for the people to enter into his presence back then, and he made a way for the people to enter into his presence now, and now it's everyone alive. And so that, I think it all fits into that same broad story of that return to Eden, that return to the mountain garden of God's presence. It's all connected.
Yeah. Mm. I will have to say, when people say that this is all mythology that people made up, this is like the crazy, if somebody's going to make up a religion, this is like not,
it's the worst one to make up.
That's
the worst one.
Everything that gets cleared up by a man who's born from a virgin.
Yeah.
And then
gets executed.
Executed in the worst possible way imaginable in that world. And then he comes back to life.
But only a few people see him.
It's like everything about this religion is ridiculous unless it's all true.
Right.
And if it's true, it makes sense. If it's true, it makes sense in the big story that we've been given.
Yeah.
We don't have to figure, well, I suppose we do have to figure out how the narrative all fits together just because we're so distant from its initial creation. But in its initial creation, it would have made perfect sense to everybody.
Yeah.
I find that fascinating.
Yeah. Mm. Well, thanks for giving the message, Tim. It was great.
I will say I suffered over it. Maybe more than I've ever suffered over a message, simply because there are so many facets to it. I really wanted to talk about our blood containing the force of our life, and how so much of the animal cleanliness stuff also related to those animals that choose to show no honor to the life that they're taking, and they eat the blood, and how it works its way. That same line works its way all the way through to Jesus giving his life. We say he gave his life, but he actually gave his blood. He bled.
Well, Tim, let's talk, because I'm doing sacrifice on the final week, and there's plenty of space for me to talk about that, so I can help convey some ideas you didn't get a chance to go get into if you want.
Yeah, and I wrote it all out and then erased it all out of my machine because it was just too much.
Yeah.
It was way too much.
Yeah,
and
I've dealt with that a lot this series.
Yeah, so
can you bring back the bloodless insects?
Yeah, can we hear that again?
That was a cliffhanger.
Yeah,
insects don't have blood in them. I sound so stupid on that stuff, man. You know, I feel like I'm a caricature.
Not at all. Have we missed any? Are there any that we haven't heard yet?
Split hooves. 2 birds, 2 lambs, 6 quarts of flour, 1 cup of olive oil, 1 cedar stick, some scarlet yarn, 1 hyssop branch, 1 pot of water, washing all your clothes and shaving all the hair off of your head, including your beard and your eyebrows. Hey, I didn't make that up.
Yeah. That's going to come in very handy in a very specific way someday.
Barry, where are we going next?
So next, I'm back in the saddle this weekend, and I'm going to be talking about Sabbath, and I think it's going to be good. It's going to be continuing this whole series, and I think I mentioned it before, I'm excited to see some of the applications that I'm going to be drawing from the idea of Sabbath and how they apply to our lives today might be perhaps novel for some that they haven't heard them interpreted in this way. So cool. I think it's going to be interesting. Yep.
All right. Are we doing another tech Sabbath?
You can if you want. That'll be a sub application point, right, is that you could continue to try that.
All right. We'll look forward to that. All right. So Tim, something we do when you come in is we ask you to bring music, you and Marin kind of bring in a song or two. Most of the time it's songs that I have definitely never heard of, and you did not disappoint this time. I want to play these songs and just kind of talk over them a little bit.
Well, let me just say that my wife and I talked about this one. This song liberated me from the absolute seriousness of being in a blues band. I was a kid, and at the time, you were in the blues or you were not into the blues. And there was nothing joyous about the blues back then. It was such a serious thing that was happening in the late 60s.
A serious art form?
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, my whole life was the blues. And
so this made you not want to be in the blues?
I got this record because Felix Pappalardi played bass on two of the songs, and Felix Pappalardi produced one of the Cream records, and he was in Mountain. And if with Leslie West, yeah.
You had me at Cream. Keep going.
And I thought, and the only reason I bought it was because they looked really serious on the cover, and Felix Pappalardi was on it. And Perry Robinson, who was the great jazz clarinetist. But anyway, I bought the record and I took it home, and the first song was so rough and so, how do I say it, unproduced and not the blues and so fun and so happy, and it has no meaning at all.
Huh.
And it just captured my heart, and my wife and I sang this in a band later, a really fun blue-eyed soul band that we were in that was just rocking everybody, and then we would open with this song and people would just start jumping and happy. And so when you hear it, this is not going to tell you anything about musicianship or anything other than that music can at times take you to places that are just joyous.
Okay.
And the production is awful. And Felix Pappalardi doesn't.
I'm trying to think, what are these overproduced blues people you're talking about? That blues was so serious that this was liberating and a departure as something unproduced.
Oh, no, no. It's a lifestyle of the blues.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So who is it?
It's Bunky and Jake.
Oh, yeah.
I don't.
Bunky and Jake. What's the name of the song?
Uncle Henry's Basement. And
all right.
I'm telling you, you're all going to think this is the stupidest thing I've ever done. Hit it.
Here we go. So this made you not like the blues?
No. He didn't say that. This liberated him. It gave him joy.
Oh, yeah.
We're missing half the music.
Oh, sorry.
We're missing half the music.
There's something about those old bass tones that are so bouncy.
Jake isn't even in the recording. Chip on a mystical ship. I gotta be Jake. You're never gonna find true happiness.
Wait. We're missing vocals?
Yeah, we're missing half of the vocals.
Bizarre.
We're missing the guitar.
Why?
What do you mean?
Here, way back there.
Oh. Yeah.
So is this like a one?
This is like half. Yeah, we're missing half the music.
Weird.
What do you mean?
Is it just because it's playing different on this device? Does it not sound like this in your car?
No, it doesn't sound like this.
Tyler, what'd you do?
I ruined it, everybody. What are we missing?
The bass is funky.
Half the music.
Make the noises with your mouth of what we're missing.
I don't know this song that well.
You're never going to find true happiness. except with the one and only.
So I can see why you and your wife did this. Went back and forth and back
it was
and
all
forth.
Back and forth.
Wow, but
everybody's going.
Basement.
And this song had a guitar end and we didn't hear it.
Wow.
I heard it.
Yeah. I heard a guitar.
I didn't hear it.
Yeah, it was way back. The whole thing starts Wait, maybe he's getting half.
I heard it.
Maybe it's like splitting on all our headphones.
Maybe, because I did not hear a guitar.
No, you heard it?
Yeah.
Did you hear the male vocals?
Yeah.
You heard the male vocals?
Yeah.
Weird.
Man.
Is our listener going to hear the male vocals?
No.
There's no way to know.
There's no way to know. Let me
that
just
is
say
so odd.
When we finish this, I'll let you hear what I heard.
Oh, it's my really goodness. That's good. Amazing.
Weird. Yeah.
Okay. So
you didn't hear the...
No, we totally didn't hear that.
Maybe he was getting stereo and we were getting mono or something like that.
The we were getting... Back then, the production was so split.
Yeah.
That you, if you, when you
hand
put on
right
head,
and left,
yeah. And so, if you wore your headphones, you would hear half the music in one ear and half the music in the
that
other.
That has to be what
and
just happened.
That's
just
what I just, that's what happened.
Yeah. And we just got one half of it. So,
wow.
Oh,
so, I'm just going to say, folks, that is one of the greatest songs ever, but the technology failed us.
Maybe.
Wow. No, I mean, so when I
heard it,
I was in the studio once, well, my first real time in a real studio, and every single song had like, tons of tracks, like overloaded with tracks, and it was way too overproduced and too serious. And right at the same time, the White Stripes came out with their first album, and it was like two or three instruments tops.
Yeah.
And it was cleansing. It was
cleansing. There is a really great album. There are two great albums that are like that. Blind Faith's first album, the first, they only did one album.
Yeah.
When Blind Faith first came out, they put Clapton on one side and Winwood on the other.
Yeah.
And they, if you listen to them on one side or the other, you get one song is just a trio over here and the other song is a trio over there, and you put them together. And they both play a really long solo on the song.
Presence of the Lord?
No, not on Presence of the Lord. It's on the first one. It's down, 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 down. Okay, they're separated. And then there's a really great album by, and I know this sounds funny for me to say this, but it's by Scandal with Patti Smyth. And it's the girl who sang Hit Me With Your Best Shot. The whole record was recorded like a live thing. The one guitar player's over here on the left side, the other guitar player's, and they never cross over. The drums and the bass are just driving through the middle, and her voice just shoots out.
Huh.
And it is so cool because it's so like rock and roll used to be, but it's like it's got so much body and soul, and they're both playing so well, and it just thrills.
By the way, the Blind Faith song is Had to Cry.
That's right.
You're welcome, listener.
Yep.
Because I know
I was
you want
that might be what it was.
I know you want to go listen to it now.
Is, and okay, when I was 16, every morning I got up and I dropped the needle on the "Do What You Like" on Blind Faith and listened to Eric Clapton's guitar solo.
It's so psychedelic.
I just dropped it on that one solo, and then I said, "Okay, today I've heard the best it can be," and I would go to school.
Wow.
That's my life. When she met me, I was
do
listening.
Do what you like.
And when. That thing is like, oh, good Lord. I know why they call
it. I know what I'm listening to on my way home.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
All right.
Not that I'm excited about
this. Yeah, Marin.
Okay, I also brought perhaps the weirdest song I've ever brought. But it's because I've been talking for the last 2 weeks or so about taking my son to South Carolina to see his favorite band play in their farewell tour.
Yeah.
So I've been talking about him so much, I thought I may as well.
Let's just bring
I may
him
as
in.
Well bring them in. This is me without you. Specifically this song, because it is great, but see, not all of their songs sound like this song. So this is like, you know, you can't really get like, if I showed you a painting, but I only showed you like the bottom right corner, that's not going to give you the entire painting. You'll say, oh, wow, those
it's a nice
colors
corner.
And shapes are cool, but you won't get the big picture. And that's a lot what listening to just one song from this
so
band
what are we, what
is
are we
like.
Trying to hear in this?
It's lyrically dense, very lyrically dense. Like you have to read their lyrics like you would read poems or something.
Right.
But then specifically this song.
You mean
song,
I got to dive deep into a song called Brownish Spider?
Nah, that's attached, but yeah, sort of.
This one's called Oh Porcupine.
Oh Porcupine.
Very dense.
Listen to the space. I love music so much. I love music that leaves lots of breathing room. This bass player could have easily played through every phrase, but he opted not to, and I think the end result was better.
All right, let's check it out. Oh, Porcupine, Me Without You.
When my son first was playing this, I'm like, that's my Sharona.
Yeah. It's a lot like the last one.
Is it? Are you only hearing half of it?
Yeah. Michael Stipe?
Not quite.
Oh.
It's like half spoken word poetry, half like post-punk screamo. So much space.
Are they going to get mad here in a minute?
Yeah, sure.
That drummer's really good.
Oh, my goodness.
So does Jane just, like, sit at home and do this?
He will scream every word. My reserved son.
As he's playing drums?
Yeah, so Darwin and I, on our trip to Chicago yesterday, I played her some of this because she was curious. And she's like, I just can't picture Jaden being into this music. And I'm like, no, I mean, oh.
That's it?
No.
Oh.
They just leave these giant spaces and these giant holes. Turn it up. Why do you want to talk over this song? It's greatness.
That's the whole point.
No. The song, the point is the song. Listen to the interplay between bass and drums. Then random dissonant noise.
Do they have a singer?
That is their guy. And that's what I mean this is the bottom right hand corner of a gigantic picture.
So he just sings.
He sings on some songs. He recites this poetry on other songs.
Okay, does he play an instrument?
He yells on some songs. He plays guitar. He plays accordion.
Where are they from?
Philadelphia.
Oh, that explains everything. I just wondered if he was playing the guitar and doing the vocals. That's all I was asking.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Like, so when we saw them, he played instruments on some songs, but not every song.
So do they have a guitar player separately?
They have two guitar players separately.
Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, this is Jaden's number one drum influence of all time.
So he knows how to play this song on the drums.
A lot of times when he is sound checking at whatever campus he is at, he's using these beats. And I can stand on stage and recognize what my son is playing, and it's the cutest thing in the world. But like, of all the drum influences he could have in his life, I'm glad it's this guy.
Oh, yeah, that guy's really good.
Yeah. And then it gets a little more melodic toward the end. Boom, ba, boom, boom. Now it's like, come on and dance. Boom, ba, boom, boom. Again, I could just sit there and read their lyrics for hours and still not know what they mean.
Do you know what they're talking about?
Not always.
Right. Porcupine's in a tree.
It's very allegorical. A lot of times it's kind of like an Aesop's fable or something. And again, you have to look for the bigger meaning.
Oh, now he's yelling.
Yell screaming? Singing? I drove 12 hours for this. And they played this song at the show.
There was a time
was
in my
incredible.
Life where like this would have like been everything to me.
I could see that.
Yeah. Actually, I might just go listen to it now.
You really
like,
probably
sit
should.
In my office and cry.
Yeah.
He'll fly like a moth to the light of this, their open hand.
Listen to the transition of this, because this is kind of... This is an example of why you could never describe them with one song. No, this is kind of like the ending of that song.
No, it's a new song.
Not really. See what I mean?
Have you ever introduced your son to Sunny Day Real Estate?
No, but I know what you're talking about.
Because the Pink Album, if he likes this stuff, mm-hmm. he would love the Pink Album.
He calls this, what did he say, post-punk art rock. Yeah, he's into Radiohead.
He's like, just if saying
it's,
words.
Yeah, if it's artistic and a bit off the beaten path, he loves it.
My 42-year-old daughter was home last weekend, and somehow she got a hold of our Sonus. They were decided to dance around the house to songs from her childhood.
Yeah.
And it was cool. It was all Urge Overkill and the Posies.
Yes.
It was all that kind of Sunny Day Real Estate yeah. and stuff. And I'm thinking, I'm so glad I raised my children well. Because like, when my daughter, when she wants to drag out her favorite song yeah. and it's Urge Overkill,
yeah.
I'm thinking, yeah.
Yeah, you did your job.
I did my job.
I saw them live. No more spider, no yeah. more. Yeah. Do you hear this? Like the
sometimes though, sometimes when this kind of stuff happens, I'm like, he's the joke's on us, right?
Kind of.
We think
maybe.
He's being serious, but he's no. saying no more spider.
No, but so oh, you've got to dig into this yeah, bit. Yeah, you yeah. have to dig
I
in.
I don't know. They're in the studio, remember, at $975 an hour. They're, yeah, they yeah. better be serious.
Everything is intentional. Yeah. So that little refrain or whatever shows up three times on this album, like beginning,
yeah, yeah.
middle, and end, and it's telling a story. Like some, especially nowadays, bands are like one MP3 at a time. That's what they're releasing.
Yeah.
But this is like a story. You have to take the whole thing. And
all right,
yeah,
me without you.
The brownish spider, the yellow spider, they all
yep,
mean something.
The orange spider.
They all mean something.
All right. Once again, two songs that I've never heard of, but I do like. Barry, are these in your library?
They are not. No, yeah. they are not.
Yeah,
dig
Barry's
in,
just
guys.
Sitting there with his
dig,
eyes closed.
Dig deep.
I'm more into the post emo rage folk.
Hey, you know, well, I have to. What was it?
Wow, I got Marin on that one.
I can't breathe.
So I used to open for a band frequently that said they played slowcore. Country punk.
Oh, wow.
See, the joke's on us.
No. Yeah. Don't tell Jaden because he takes every word seriously.
Yeah.
Every note, every beat.
Mm. All right. Tim, thanks for being with us today.
Yeah, it's great to be
here. It was great
to
have you back. Barry, you'll be next week.
Yep.
We're all in.
All in.
All right. Marin, you're back next week too?
I do believe.
All right. So between now and then, will you please send us out?
I sure will. Do justly, love mercy, and walk humbly with your God.
Don't eat shrimp.
Oh my goodness, no. No, no, no.
And we'll see you on the other side of Sunday.
You need to hear that whole record.